Welcome to episode 7 of The Grand Life, a podcast that explores grandparenting, the relationships within the role, and the ways in which our grandparenting impacts our children and their children. I'm Emily Morgan, and today we are mixing it up a little for episode 7, an episode we're calling Facebook Fail. I'm referring to the times when we make a decision to use social media that actually backfires or results in some bad blood between our adult children and ourselves. I think I mentioned to you that part of what got this podcast started for me was that I mentor a group of young women who are in their late 20s, early 30s, and who, when talking with me and asking me for a piece of advice, would hear what I said and then immediately respond, "You should tell my parents that." So here I am, talking to you, the parents. As part of this episode, I'm sharing some comments that have been shared with me about social media from the members of the millennial generation, not necessarily the group of women I mentor. These women have written or called into the podcast to share their stories. Let me say first that in my experience, they are a wonderful generation. They are trying so hard to get things right in a comparative world where the loudest message they are receiving is this: get it right or you will single-handedly ruin the next generation. Well, no wonder they're often opting out of parenthood completely. But the ones who haven't are doing a great job, despite the cacophony of messages to the contrary. Secondly, they really need our help. They want to stay open to our influence and invite us into their world, but for almost all of us, social media is not the world we grew up in. For our adult kids, it is. They are the ones who got their first Facebook account as they were accepted into college, and Facebook wasn't so much a social platform at that time as it was a place to connect to college study groups and events. They started with MySpace in high school and moved on to Facebook. Now it's Instagram and Snapchat and Twitter. It's our job to, at the very least, learn how to properly use what we've got now. I'm pretty sure as soon as we do, there'll be something else. But for now, let's review how to stay connected with our adult children on social media without being alienated, or without us alienating them. To help me talk about this, I've got my producer husband here to join me in the discussion. Hello, Mike.
Hey.
Welcome.
Thanks.
Or I should say welcome back, since you've already been on this podcast before. So you're going to kind of play the role, I guess, of a Facebook expert. Is that right?
Well, I'll tell you, it's hard to find an expert on social media privacy who is dialed in to the challenges of being a social media active grandparent.
Yeah.
So here at The Grand Life, we've done our homework and we've become our own experts of a sort, and only to a point. So I'm here to help share what we've learned, some of the do's and don'ts around social media privacy for grandparents.
Okay, so we have some listeners who have written in or called in some comments to us, and obviously these are anonymous because all of these women said to me, "I don't want my mother hearing this and I don't want her to think it's me," or whatever. So I can't really tell you their names. We do have one who called in and said her mom was fine about it. So we'll hear from her in a little bit.
But in general, we're trying to make relationships better, not worse.
Right, right. So the first one is from a local woman who says, "Hey, answering your question about Facebook parent etiquette. My issue isn't so much my mother. She's rarely in and rarely posts, though I know from infrequent likes that she's seeing pictures and videos of the grandkids. My issue is my mother-in-law. I've actually blocked her from most of my content because she comments on everything and uses possessive pronouns to refer to my children, like her girls, her babies, which is ballsy for someone who makes little effort to see them." And then she puts in parentheses, "Obviously, I need some counseling about this. She also friends my friends after meeting them once at my daughter's birthday party and turns every situation to being about her and her experience. It's just infuriating to see daily, so I unfollowed her and only unblock a few posts of my kids each week for her to see. I'm sure I sound like a real jerk, but it's self-preservation from a helicopter person at this point. So luckily, my husband agrees with me." There's so much to unpack here, Mike. Maybe you can explain a little bit about blocking.
Yeah, let me zoom in on sort of the back half of her explanation, which is how she may be limiting her mom's ability to see some of the content.
That's what this woman is doing to keep her mother-in-law, it's actually her mother-in-law, from seeing things. So you might not realize that, but you are, you might be limited by your daughter-in-law to what you're seeing. So if you're only seeing something once a week, she might be posting something every day, but you're only seeing it once a week.
Because over in settings and then under privacy and then under that activity, there's a question that Facebook poses: who can see your future posts? And one of those choices is called friends accept, with a checklist of all your Facebook friends. So whomever you check off in this list, maybe grandma from time to time, is blocked from seeing this particular post when you select friends accept, meaning all your Facebook friends except for the ones that mom has checked off.
Yeah, except for the mother-in-law who calls her babies when they're really her daughter-in-law's babies. As you're listening to this, I would imagine that some of you are like, oh, this is just too much. This is just too much to deal with. I'm not going to care about this.
You and I have had this conversation a lot. Facebook's privacy model is complicated.
It's complicated, but it's necessary to learn it, and you have to flex. You have to stretch to figure this out, or you are going to be alienated from the people you love the most. I do think the sharing, you know, kind of becoming friends with all your daughter-in-law's friends, not a great idea. You don't need to be friends with those people. You know, your daughter-in-law can tell you something, but you just don't need that. Okay, here's another listener. I saw your post asking for Facebook etiquette stuff, and I would say when it comes to Facebook, I wish my mother-in-law would not post pictures of my child that I texted or emailed to her without asking permission. I'm okay with her sharing pictures that I posted, but I rarely put up pics of my child on Facebook, and there are many that I would send to grandparents, like bathtub pictures, that I don't want published publicly.
Sure.
It makes total sense.
Yeah, and this one is maybe an easy one that it should be easy to remember as long as we commit to actually being present to these kinds of issues, and this falls into some of my don'ts in my do's and don'ts. First and most importantly, don't post pictures of your grandchildren without first clearing it with their parents. And by the way, if the grandchildren are old enough to have their own social media accounts, you need to get their approval too before you post pictures of them. Embarrassment can ensue. Great embarrassment, depending on how you as a grandparent might be, you know, lovingly doting on a grandchild old enough to have a social media presence. Do not post the name of your forthcoming grandchild or its sex or even its very existence before the parents have done so and you have gotten permission from the expecting mother or father.
Yeah, we had another person write in. She wrote in and told us about her father-in-law posting ultrasound pictures of their baby before she'd even announced the pregnancy at work. And that was just, I mean, she said they recovered from that, but man, that would be really difficult.
That could lead to some really awkward questions with your coworkers, like who's going to cover your work and are you coming back and should we replace you? Oh my goodness.
Yeah, they don't understand how that, that it's a domino effect.
Yeah.
It's ripples in a pond. It really does have a huge effect. And I think that sometimes people think, I'm just putting this on her Facebook wall. But it once a person makes a comment, it gets shared to everybody, all the people who are connected to the other person who shared or said something.
Now, the last of my don'ts that has to do with don't share a thing may seem a little bit extreme, but understand you've got parents who maybe are a little bit more attuned to the risks around social media than you are. That's why we're having this conversation on the podcast to begin with. So here's the don't. Don't ever post the birth date of your grandchild or enough information that could cause someone to put together what your grandchild's birthday is. It may happen. Someone else may post it. A parent may post it. A friend may post it. You just don't want to be the one guilty of posting it, and here's why.
Well, it isn't just the birthday. It's the birthday with the full name of the child.
Because an identity thief could connect that to the grandchild's name and then use that information to steal the child's online identity, maybe even years before that would be discovered by the grandchild or by her parents.
Right. Our kids have gotten to the point where they're, you know, when a baby is born, they don't post the full name and the birth date, the full date, because it just makes it so easy for somebody if they wanted to. I mean, obviously, there's not all sorts of nefarious things going on all the time, but nobody wants to give an opportunity for that to happen. So, you know, when I write something, I would just write the little one, or I won't say the name. So happy birthday to our little one or whatever. And I guess I shouldn't say our little one.
Yeah, that's right. It's because it's not ours.
Not really ours.
Not really.
Oh, yeah. It's complicated. We have one here said, here's one for my parents. If I could tell my parents one thing about using Facebook, I would say, don't post your phone number on your Facebook page when you want me to call you. It's not a DM.
Yeah, direct message.
It's not a direct message, right? You know, direct message is a completely different thing. Maybe you could explain what a direct message is.
On the Facebook app in most smartphones, in the upper corner, there's a little conversation bubble with a lightning bolt on it. And that's a quick exit out to a whole nother app that sits on the smartphone called Messenger.
Right. So it's a little bubble next to the magnifying glass where you would use it as a search bar.
Yeah. And it takes you to this other app that is independent of Facebook, but still connected to it so that you can get back and forth easily. But the idea that it's a separate app might also suggest to you that it's a separate kind of communicating. And it is. It is direct messaging with one other or a small group of other people. And the information you enter in a direct message is not visible by people who look at the Facebook page. It's visible only by the people that you are direct messaging with.
Correct. And actually, I've always known it as PM, which is private message. So if you hear PM or DM, those are equivalent. And actually, somebody DM'd me an interesting note. My mom, who will be 74 in July, will randomly comment on a post of mine about something that has absolutely nothing to do with my post. For example, a post about something I did with my kids, my mom might comment about my dad's doctor appointment that day.
Now, why would she do that? Why would she take a thread on a Facebook post that's about one topic and hijack it into another one?
Well, I mean, I think it's possible that there's just inattention to detail, which is really important for us as grandparents. We need to pay attention to what we're doing. And then the other thing might be that she just feels like it's a text message, so she can just text her whatever she wants to in the midst of a conversation.
So that it's like private communication, which in fact it is not, because she didn't DM this.
Right, exactly. She was putting this out to everybody on Facebook. Another thing that she has done is asking overly personal questions as a comment on a Facebook post. So I posted once that I fell and I'd stepped on a kid or a dog toy and stumbled. My mom commented, "Do you have a UTI?" Which then she said, I had male college friends jokingly debating for several comments after if they agreed with my mom or not.
On whether she had a urinary tract infection.
Right, which had nothing to do really with falling and stumbling. But
so, you know, they call this social media for a reason, right?
Exactly.
It's a way of communicating to your social group. So let's not forget then that depending on a whole number of settings, some of which we've already talked today, a bunch of people are seeing what you're writing, and you don't necessarily know who those people are when you write it.
It's almost the socially awkward equivalent of going up to a group at a party and starting to talk about things that are personal that they don't have any interest in and they don't even know you. So we just have to remember those things when we're working on Facebook, that you know, we need to be appropriate, we need to be keeping things private if it's a private thing, because fortunately, a lot of times, the people who are writing to me say things like, she's unintentionally hilarious. I mean, they think it's funny and they go with it, and hopefully you will, but sometimes it's just irreparable. One last thing from a woman who's our age who wrote in, and her short and sweet answer was Facebook etiquette for grandparents. One, always tag your sons or daughters on the post. Two, never be the first person to post pictures for any event or occasion that they also attended. So like if they've attended and you're, you know, reposting the picture, they post their pictures first of their children. And three was always respect their wishes. If they don't want something posted, no matter how cute the picture is, don't post it.
Great advice. That's a sound, concise set of things to follow.
Yep.
If that's all you do, if you just follow those three rules, that would help you avoid all kinds of relationship pitfalls.
Now, to continue our conversation, we have Chelsea Groen. She was very open with us, and said her mom didn't mind if she shared some of the information. So we are going to listen to Chelsea, an interview with Chelsea. Kind of is fun. We get a kick out of listening to her. Because, you know, her mom obviously just has kind of been slow on the learning curve. But Chelsea's a great gal and very understanding with her mom. Lots of grace, lots of mercy.
It's pretty much she's clueless on how to use it. She thought that instead of to let people know that you liked something, you had to share it. So it would be like I would go on my Facebook feed and it would be just her sharing literally like everything, like random albums of people's families and like quotes that people posted and people's statuses. And I was like, Mom, why are you sharing all these people's things? And she was like, oh, well, I need to let my friends know that I like what they're sharing. That's how I let them know. And I was like, no, Mom, you don't have to share everything that they post. You just press like or comment. And then she learned that. But it took a while. It was like we had to tell her multiple times, like, Mom, you don't need to share everything that your friends post.
You know, it's obvious from what Chelsea says that she and her mom have a good working relationship. There's a lot, like you said, Emily, a lot of grace there. But it's easy to imagine if there weren't, that the things that her mom is doing could really damage that relationship. You know, it is possible to be active on social media without straining your relationship with your children. We have to be very intentional about it, taking nothing for granted, being just a little bit tech savvy, and getting approvals at every turn.
Today in The Stretch It Takes, we're going to talk about what keeps us busy. Too busy to pay attention to not what is, but who is in front of us. As I've grown older and found myself with more time on my hands, I realize that it's harder to flex when I'm pulled away from what I'm doing for myself in order to pay attention to others. Maybe we are all having to concentrate more on taking care of ourselves because there's so much more about us that demands caring for. We are slower, prone to health troubles, and in general, we're just higher maintenance people as we grow older. Or maybe we are just allowing ourselves the grace we've been showing others for so long. But whatever the cause, I know I am finding it a stretch to stop what I'm doing and pay attention. So when my grandchildren come to visit and are at my elbow asking me a question, it is easy for me to miss the moment. I remember that about my own grandparents. They were often in the middle of something when I tried to talk to them. My grandmother would be sponging off the table while we talked, or scrubbing a dish or peeling potatoes. It's funny what we remember when we think back on our own grandparents. They probably could have used a little relationship yoga. So let's go to the mat and figure out what we can do to better our time with our grands. My most vivid memory of my grandfather on my father's side was of him sitting on the couch with the newspaper open. It covered his entire upper face and body. All I could see was his white buzz cut above the headline of the day. I realize as I write this that newspapers were so substantial, physically bigger in those days, wider and taller, not like the papers of today that could pass for a greeting card. Anyway, Grandpa was a quiet and fairly stern man as I saw him. So looking back, it surprises me that I had the brass to walk up to him and snap my finger right at the fold of the newspaper he was reading. Yes, you heard it right. I would walk up and flick my finger at the paper, sometimes even to the point of leaving a hole. Grandpa wasn't the type to stick his nose through the hole in response, or even peek through the hole with his eye and say, "I see you." No, he just kept reading as if I didn't do anything. I suppose he didn't want to encourage that behavior. Of course, I ran away in fear, and let's face it, maybe a little delight at having done it. I wonder now, though, how he felt about that. I wonder if behind the curtain of the Rochester Times, he smirked or he grimaced. Was he amused or annoyed? Here's the thing about hand tools, and I'm referring to anything we hold in our hand that distracts us from the moment. So in my definition, a newspaper is a hand tool. Hand tools are a way of keeping us busy, a distraction. They are the things that occupy our attention and come between us and others. And a good thing to remember, they've been around since the beginning of time. This isn't something that began with the iPhone. Imagine prehistoric grandparents banging stones together to spark a fire. Do you think that they really were taking the time to look into the eyes of their grandchildren when they stopped by to ask why the moon looked orange or wanted to know if the bug bite on their leg looked okay? I'm going to say that since the beginning of time, we have been using hand tools to work hard, garner information, or simply amuse ourselves, many times at the cost of relationships. I confess that one time when my children were younger, I sat on the couch for hours, okay, maybe a few days, completely riveted by Ayn Rand's novel Atlas Shrugged. I faintly remember the children coming up to me and asking what we were having for dinner and shrugging it off with, oh, I don't know, maybe bacon and eggs or cereal. I vividly remember the piles of laundry around me and my attitude that nothing mattered more than finishing that book, not even my children. That book was a hand tool for my entertainment, not unlike all the other hand tools in history. So it started me thinking, let's start a list of things, some of them very good things that produce amazing results, that can get in the way of being present with our grands. A table saw, a fishing pole, screwdriver, golf club, mixer, iron, rake, book, craft projects, newspaper, grill, computer, iPhone, Instagram, Facebook. Those are just a few tools we use to either accomplish a job, create something, or entertain ourselves. My point is, it's always been something. There is nothing bad about any of them. But in reality, we have a hard time putting aside our work or play when asked a question or called upon to listen to a toddler or a 10-year-old. It's a stretch for all of us, a discipline to prioritize the other person, especially when it feels like after so many years of serving our kids and grandkids that it's our turn. The challenge is to put down the tool and with great intention pick up the person dearest to us and hold them closer. Are you up for the challenge? My relationship with my grandfather might have been quite a different one had he put the newspaper down, scooped me up in his arms, and hugged me with those same hands that gripped the paper. I would like to believe that an embrace like that would have been a powerful tool for good. In today's Passing Along Our Passion, I talked to a woman who's been creating things nearly her whole life and is now taking the time to teach her grandchildren those same skills. When Elizabeth Holloway was a young girl, she got a lot of praise for her sewing, even before she could read. She was a slow reader, but a fast learner when it came to her passion for sewing.
I can't basically read a pattern because I learned to read when I was like 8 or 9. So I just put a puzzle, my pieces together like a puzzle.
You mean you created your own patterns?
No, I just figured this looks like a sleeve and I just shoved it up here and made it work. But when I read directions, I can't understand what they're trying to get me to do. So because I look at it like a puzzle, it became very easy for me. So I've been able to help children, other than my grandkids too, to tell them if you don't understand the directions, look at the pieces and think about what you're creating.
Her passion continued throughout her school days and was spurred on by a teacher who recognized and encouraged her creativity.
I am making you the class artist. And I looked at her like, what are you talking about? And I still have the butterflies and the tulips and stuff that I made for the windows and everything. I went to town and I've been doing crafting, sewing and things like that just because Mrs. Waller loved me.
Elizabeth has taken that interest all the way from creating her own wedding gown to now passing on that passion for sewing to her grandchildren. Not all her grandchildren are on board, she explains.
Well, they had to have sort of an interest. And because Emily couldn't do it, my daughter Emily couldn't do it, she said, Grandma can show you how to do that.
Another granddaughter has really taken off with the craft of sewing.
Graham, I've got this. She says, anybody can do this. Sewing's a breeze. And from there, she ended up getting her own sewing machine, and she made her little sewing room in her closet, and she created purses and all kinds. She's amazing.
It's easy to hear in Elizabeth's voice that she fully enjoys the chance to use her creative skills to serve others.
And I enjoy sharing whatever anybody wants me to share with them. I just love people. And if they're open to me helping them, I'm there.
I asked her about how she handles it when her grandchildren get frustrated while working on a project.
You know, this is not a biggie. So you've got to choose in your life what you're going to be upset about. And this is something you don't need to be upset about. So I try to explain to them about there are going to be hard things in life to handle. We have to pick and choose which ones we're going to get upset about.
And then also, how do you handle your own expectations of what perhaps a pillowcase would look like, or when your grandchild's working on something and it's not quite right, how do you handle that?
I just praise them and praise them. It doesn't matter. You know, they think they've created quite a thing, and you just make a big deal over it. I tried to explain or show a mom, and it's amazing how many times you show a mom and I'm more excited about the thing they created than the mom.
I'd like to thank Elizabeth for sharing her passion with us. Let me encourage you that if you have a specific topic or interest or passion you'd like to share with us, please send me a message through our Facebook page, The Grand Life Podcast, or you can email me at grandlifeconnection@gmail.com. For upcoming podcasts, I'm seeking out people who might share about how they take time with each grand individually, or who might want to talk to me about how they share their faith traditions with their grands. We will be talking about those things on upcoming podcasts. You can always call me and leave a voicemail at 317-572-7876, and we'll get back to you. Finally, I would like to share with you a piece of artwork that is dear to me, partly because it reinforces for me everything we've been talking about today. It's called First Steps and was created in 1890 by Vincent van Gogh. It hangs in the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and it is a painting of a couple working in a garden. Behind the woman are billowing sheets hanging on a fence. In the forefront is a man scooched down on one knee as the mother looks to be releasing a young toddler into his arms. Beside the man's body is his shovel, and behind him is his wheelbarrow. He has abandoned his tools to watch his child, who is about to take her first steps. There's so much to love about this painting. The blues and greens, the double entendre of first steps, because in my imagination, the billowing sheets look like the ballerina's tutus. And in the message in the medium, stop what you're doing, put your tools down, and be ready for what's about to happen. That goes for every kind of anything that could come between you and the moment. It's a great painting to share with your grands, and I hope you will.
Next time on The Grand Life.
We have to have a camp and bring our grandkids here. We call it Mimi and Papa Camp.
And so most of our time is spent doing very simple things.
Before breakfast, my husband takes all the kids and they do their exercises.
My children love their cousins and are very close with them, even as adults. And I hope that our grandchildren have the same experience.
That's next time on The Grand Life.
For my husband and producer Mike Morgan and me, thanks so much for joining us on this episode of The Grand Life. I don't pretend to be the best grandparent ever, but I will confess to believing that being one is the best thing ever.
Today's podcast was written and hosted by Emily Morgan, my grandmother. It was produced and edited by Mike Morgan, my grandfather. Some of the music was written by Lee Rosevier from the Free Music archive.org.